Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. A few months ago, very few New Yorkers had heard of Zohran Mamdani, a 33-year-old Democratic socialist and New York State Assembly member based in Queens. Well, last week, he rocked the political establishment by beating Andrew Cuomo and winning New York City's mayoral primary by a 12-point margin. Cuomo and his super PAC spent $31 million on the campaign. Zohran Mamdani ran a campaign to freeze the rent and provide free buses and free childcare. His main message was that working-class New Yorkers should afford to live in the city. Here is Zohran Mamdani in a video posted yesterday.
1 week ago, we shocked the establishment and redrew the political map with a campaign relentlessly focused on the needs of working people. Since then, a lot of people have asked me if I was surprised by the results. In some ways, I was. We always thought our victory would come after multiple rounds of ranked choice voting. So when we got more first-round votes than Eric Adams got in 7 rounds in the last election, it was astonishing. But in other ways, this was always the plan. We wanted to rebuild a coalition that had frayed over years of disappointment and neglect, to win people back to a Democratic Party that puts working people first. So let's break it down. Last November, New York City saw some of the biggest shifts towards Donald Trump of anywhere in the country. Much of it took place in working class and immigrant neighborhoods. A few days after the election, we went to Hillside Avenue in Queens and Fordham Road in the Bronx, not to lecture, but to listen. And what we heard was a desire to bring down the cost of living. That was our focus, and many of those voters came back. Brighton Beach went for Trump by 44 points. Last week, we won it by 16. College Point was a plus 11 Trump neighborhood. We took it by 8 points. We saw similar or even bigger swings in Bath Beach, Astoria Heights, and the North Shore of Staten Island. The headline is clear. We can win back voters many have written off if we give them something to vote for, not just tell them what to be against.
And as Zohran Mamdani said in that video on November 15th, he asked working class New Yorkers of color why they voted for Donald Trump. The majority cited Gaza and economic issues.
Have you voted for Democrats in the past?
I have.
And what would it take for you to vote for a Democrat in the future?
Being able to pay attention to the regular Americans and their economic needs.
They should make economics the forefront of their campaign.
People were not really feeling it in their pocket.
I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. I voted against Trump also in the 2018 midterms. Insulting us, playing on our emotions. All they do is shame you, and they just want to use like glitzy campaigns, and they get celebrities. And
like, if you're speaking the things that people want to hear about, I don't care what color you are, I'll vote for you.
You know, we have a mayor's race coming up next year, and if there was a candidate talking about freezing the rent, making buses free, making universal childcare a reality, are those things that you'd support?
Absolutely. He'd have my vote all day.
We need childcare that is affordable. Buses should be free. The hike in the Metro cards is, like, totally unaffordable.
So my name is Zohran Mamdani. I'm going to be running for mayor next year.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, sir. Wow. And I'm going to be running on that platform. Thank
you. I'm going to vote for you.
If Zohran Mamdani wins in the November election, he will be the first Muslim mayor of New York City. So much has been written about whether the Democratic Party establishment will get behind him and how this will affect the party moving forward. Top Democrats like Senator Chuck Schumer and House Minority Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, both New Yorkers, have so far not endorsed Zohran Mamdani. We will talk about how his campaign did it. How did his campaign manage to get 50,000 people to volunteer? They made 2.3 million calls and knocked on over 1.6 million doors. Today, we're joined by three guests. Grace Mauser is co-chair of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. NYC DSA endorsed Assemblymember Zohran Mamdani, and they have over 9,500 members. Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, happy to be here.
Great to have you. Hannah Riddle is Director of Candidate Services for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, a million-member grassroots organization working to build progressive power at all levels of government. Hi, Hannah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. India Walton is senior advisor for the New York Working Families Party, senior strategic organizer with Roots Action, a union nurse in Buffalo, New York. In 2021, India Walton also shocked the Democratic Party machine by winning Buffalo's mayoral primary as a Democratic socialist. Byron Brown, the man she beat, ended up teaming up with the party establishment and Republican donors to win in the November election. Hi, India. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. So, Grace, I've been watching a lot of videos about Zoran Mamdani, and a number of local reporters said it's true. Just in March, so many New Yorkers had never heard of Zoran Mamdani.
Yes, that's accurate. He did come from a significant base. He was, of course, an assembly member in Astoria, so many New Yorkers were already familiar with him. And then, of course, an organized and activist left base were really familiar with him, too. He has been part of New York City DSA for many years now. So there was a strong foundation with many groups to build upon, and that was necessary for him to have a launch pad to build to the recognition that he obviously has now.
I've read so many articles about this race, and hardly any of them bothered to mention his platform. In fact, I have to give props to Al Jazeera English because they interviewed Max Rivlin Nadler, co-owner and reporter at Hellgate New York City. And he talked about how before Mamdani was an assembly member, he was actually a foreclosure specialist. He helped people avoid foreclosures in Queens. He said he was laser focused on the needs of low-income homeowners. And then when he became a state legislator, he advocated for taxi drivers who found themselves under crushing amounts of debt. We did shows about that, and this was devastating because many taxi drivers actually committed suicide. And at that time, Mamdani went on hunger strike with them. So, Grace, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. The mainstream media, many in the mainstream media, are not talking about any of this. They're really laser focused on whether the Democrats are going to get behind him and how he really rocked the machine. But can you talk just a little bit more about the importance of talking about where Mamdani came from? Because that's a really important reason why he won.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of perhaps mainstream media and certainly the establishment would be served by focusing less on Zoran's platform. But the fact is, the reason that his campaign was able to build such a big coalition, the reason his social media what took off in the way that it did, that people were inspired to, you know, get off their phones and come and knock doors, is because the core of his platform is incredibly resonant with working class and middle class New Yorkers. And he has been laser focused on affordability and the fact that regular New Yorkers deserve to afford the city that we live in. So the core, I mean, the three planks that built his platform were freezing the rent for rent-stabilized tenants, fast and free buses so that we have a public transit system that works for us, and universal childcare. And the rent and childcare in particular really deeply speak to what most New Yorkers spend most of their income on. Rent is number one, and then if you have a kid here, childcare is easily number two. And that was the basis of his success. It's grounded not only in socialist principles, but also, as you suggested, in his background, both as a foreclosure counselor, but also in Albany, and seeing what has failed and what has worked in terms of actually making New Yorkers' lives better.
It's also important to point out that New York City continues to be the most unequal large city in the nation. This is according to the Community Service Society, and they pointed to research by the Gini Index. The bottom 40% of New Yorkers receive only 8% of the aggregate income, while the top 20% receives almost 58%.
Yeah, that is why you see New York as a nexus, and you know, in many ways, a beginning place for a growing socialist movement, a growing left movement that's calling for a more equalized and more egalitarian society. We know that the rich have the ability to fund these programs. We know that the state and the city have the power to help redistribute these funds in an equitable way. And we believe that we deserve that and that it's possible. And this election shows that not only New Yorkers, but I think many Americans are excited by these ideas and are much more willing to vote for them and back them than establishment Democrats would have you think.
Grace Mauser is co-chair of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. They endorsed Assemblymember Zohran Mamdani. Hannah Riddle is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Hannah, what are your thoughts on what is not getting the attention it deserves? I mean, Zohran Mamdani is all over the news right now, but the issues are really not. So what are your thoughts on what deserves more attention?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think we've all seen a ton of coverage about how Mamdani effectively used social media, short form video. He effectively disseminated his message and overcame that 30+ million dollars spent against him. And I think the instinct from a lot of the establishment Democrats who are commenting on this is to try to adopt that copycat strong communications and social media strategy. But what they actually need to understand is that those strategies don't work without being grounded in that popular substantive policy platform that people love. So you've mentioned a bunch of his wildly popular policies. And overall, his message centered on fighting for people, not corporations or billionaires. And it's full of those very specific ideas that lower the cost of living for working class people, specifically that rent freeze that's supported by 80% of New York voters, cracking down on bad landlords, city-owned grocery stores, reliable free public transit, low-cost childcare, and all of that paid for by taxing corporations and the 1%. So all of these policies center around making life more affordable for the working class. And he packaged all of that in an authentic, effective way and spoke from his gut instead of from a teleprompter. And all of that was supported by his incredibly effective communication strategy, as well as that ground game that India and Grace both led on the ground in addition to Mamdani's campaign. And that affordability message is applicable in every community and every corner in every city of the country. The specific policies that he talks about are built for and responsive to New Yorkers, but costs are increasing and wages are not. And that applies all over the country. And everyone should be paying attention to how he talks about affordability and centers those working class voters.
And if people are curious about what it means to freeze the rent, I'm just reading from his website. A majority of New Yorkers are tenants. More than 2 million live in rent-stabilized apartments. As mayor, Zohran will immediately freeze the rent for all stabilized tenants and use every available resource to build the housing New Yorkers need and bring down the rent. He says the number one reason working families leave the city is because of the housing crisis. India, you come at this from a really interesting perspective. You're a longtime organizer, and you won the mayoral primary in Buffalo in 2021 as a Democratic Socialist. And the Democratic machine teamed up with the Republican Party to win. Byron Brown, the man you beat, teamed up with the establishment to win in November. So when you saw the news last week that Zohran Mamdani won, what went through your mind?
Overwhelming joy and also vindication. I think that, you know, for the last 4 years, the narrative had been that, you know, it was a fluke or it was because of the pandemic or low turnout or this Rose Garden strategy that Byron Brown ran, when the fact of the matter is that these popular policies that focus on people and in particular working people are winners. They're resonant, they're relatable, and it wins elections.
Can you tell us what happened after you won this primary? Because Byron Brown, is a four-term incumbent. So you really shocked the political world also. I'm reading from the New Republic right now. You came closer than any woman ever to running the second largest city in New York. What happened after you won the primary?
The power structure, the business class, the developer class, and the right wing was afraid of the policies that I had on my platform that really prioritized drawing down power to the people, closing the racial wealth gap, providing opportunities for affordable housing and home ownership, and correcting all of the wrongs that disinvestment and racism and redlining had on people in Buffalo. It sounds like I wanted to do the right thing, but you know, the right thing to me and the right thing to people like Zohran and Grace and Hannah is not the right thing to a lot of people in power. So they figured that I must be stopped.
In India, the big question now is Andrew Cuomo going to run as an independent? What are your thoughts?
Who cares? I think that Zohran has all of the momentum. I think that he has the hearts and the minds of people right now. And as long as we support and protect him, he needs surrogates who are out here, you know, combating the misinformation so that his focus is not on that in every single interview. And I hope that Andrew Cuomo has enough class to go sit down somewhere. He's a person who resigned in disgrace as the governor. So, you know, he has already been rejected by the people of New York in this primary. And as governor, he's just not, he's not a good person. I don't even know what else to say. I just wish that he would go away.
Well, and it's also important to point out, he got a lot of votes. And this is a guy who the DOJ says sexually harassed 13 women. Here's a piece from January of last year in Politico. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed 13 women who worked for the state over the course of an 8-year period. The DOJ said the agreement concluded the governor's office violated federal rules against discrimination and retaliation between 2013 and 2021. And yet, he was the Democratic Party's candidate. And Grace, I think it's really important to really step back for a minute and talk about just how monumental Zohran Mamdani's victory was. Because according to the New York Times, one of Cuomo's PACs raised $25 million. Former Mayor Michael Bloomberg alone gave the group $8 million. DoorDash gave $1 million. Bill Ackman, an investor and supporter of Trump, gave $500,000. I was flipping through Netflix last night, and there are two shows about high-priced real estate in New York City. I mean, people watch shows about, you know, multi-million dollar apartments in New York City. There's so much money. It's one of the financial capital of the world in New York City. In fact, Andrew Ross Sorkin, the business reporter for the New York Times, on the day that it was clear Mamdani was winning, he wrote, "Some of the leaders of New York City's biggest companies are panicking. The business community, which has generally supported Cuomo, has never considered Mamdani a contender, but the polls are showing him gaining strength." Catherine Wild, chief executive of the Partnership for New York City, said, "Terror is the feeling." That so many business executives were shocked by what was happening here. So can you just talk a little bit more about just how monumental this victory was?
Yes, it's, I mean, to your points, it's incredibly historic. We have, I mean, it's probably the biggest electoral victory for the left in a century. It's really incredible. But the some of the facts that you were outlining there, and how scared the business community feels, really illustrates that the interests of business owners are out of step with the interests of working and middle class New Yorkers, the people who work for these businesses, the people who patronize these businesses. And we need to be part of a movement that actually brings the interests of the, you know, the economic ruling class into alignment with the vast majority of people who are voting, who are making the economy run, who are making these businesses, you know, profitable at all. Those need to be better aligned. And we believe that organized people beats organized money. And that's what this election really showed. We have more people who are interested in creating a New York that is affordable, that is equitable. And the business leaders feel nervous about that, but they don't have all the cards, and they shouldn't be controlling every piece of the political puzzle in the city or the state or the country, frankly. They do right now, but with this victory and with the many smaller victories that have led up to it, we're chipping away at the power that they have and empowering people who have different interests, who represent the majority of people in the city. And we're making it possible for them to step into the ownership of the city, the ownership of our politics and our economic structures that we all deserve.
What's so interesting about this is if you dig down and look at the numbers, he did so well in working class immigrant neighborhoods. We heard him go to various neighborhoods to talk to people about why they voted for Trump. He got them back. But he also won, Curbed had a piece about how he won in Hudson Yards. This is an area with a lot of luxury high rises. A lot of young, wealthy techies live in that neighborhood. So it was a broad coalition. Can you talk more about what the organizing strategy on the ground looked like to reach out to such a diverse group of New Yorkers?
Absolutely. I mean, as the case with really any DSA campaign, we are field forward campaigns. So like you have noted, we knocked on over 1.6 million doors. And those are all types of doors, doors across the city, doors of people who have never voted, doors of people who vote every time, and every single, you know, we knocked doors in every single neighborhood. And it's so incredibly important to meet people where they are at. And of course, they're often at home and have conversations face to face where someone is really listening to their concerns and to what matters to them. We often want to divide New York into different quadrants, but the fact is most New Yorkers, regardless of, you know, if you make $80,000 a year, or if you're one of the aforementioned tech bros who's maybe making closer to $300,000 a year, you still feel like you can't afford the city. You can't afford a lifestyle that will allow you to set down roots, to build a family, to make a sustainable home here. And that really unites people together. And people who make $80,000 and people who make $300,000 have a lot more in common with each other than they do with Michael Bloomberg, who is one of the richest men in the world. And pointing that out allows us to build the sort of cross-income, cross-identity solidarity that is needed to fell a political giant and avatar of the Democratic establishment like Andrew Cuomo.
What are your thoughts about the diverse coalition that this campaign managed to reach, Hannah? Again, it's just really incredible to look at some people who voted for Trump, who never, some of these people never voted Republican before, but voted for Trump and then went for Mamdani. So what are your thoughts just about the diverse coalition the campaign managed to reach?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the campaign was reaching out to voters that haven't been contacted by that kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that Democrats often use in primaries, where they're only talking to voters who voted in primaries prior or are likely to vote in this year's primary. And while also talking to those folks, it sounds like the campaign went out and talked to young people and talked to voters who have felt disenfranchised by the voting process and the disillusioned by the representatives that they have seen elected. That old program, the old school door knocking program of walking up to a door, knocking and saying, "Hi, I'm a volunteer with this candidate. Can we count on your support?" That just isn't working anymore. Volunteers need to be armed with inspiration from the candidate. They need to be armed with knowledge of the substantive platform to back it up. And that platform needs to be responsive to the needs of the working class. And just like Grace said, someone who is making $30,000, $80,000 a year has more in common with someone who's making $300,000 a year than they do with the people bankrolling Andrew Cuomo's campaign and the people that Andrew Cuomo is speaking to and the people that his policies largely benefit. The Democratic Party needs more candidates. They need to stop squishing candidates who are dynamic and authentic. They need to start embracing candidates that inspire voters to run to the polls, not to be dragged there by paid canvassers and fear tactics and TV buys.
And reading from a couple independent media outlets, thecity.nyc has a piece called "A Wave of Asian Votes Helped Propel Zohran Mamdani's Trailblazing Win." Even after months of organizing 250 volunteers to canvass for Mamdani in the city's South Asian neighborhoods, Jackpreet Singh was stunned to see how those communities turned out. He said, "Our neighborhoods are just glowing." And then there's a piece from AMNY.com. A data analysis by The Gothamist, published before primary day, showed that nearly a quarter of early voters had never before voted in a Democratic primary in New York City. I mean, India, we've been doing so many shows about what happened at the national level and why 90 million people in this country did not vote for president, which is more than voted for Trump and Harris. And here we see a quarter of early voters in New York City had never voted in a Democratic primary before. So what are your thoughts about what we're learning about the ground game?
I'm just beaming right now. And I think that we're not really learning much of anything. It's a confirmation of what we already know, but just haven't been in good practice of. And that is that the ground game is what wins elections. And, you know, we say this all the time. I just heard Grace say it. The way to be organized money is with organized people. And I think that moving forward, we have to organize, organize, organize. And what the Democrats thought was going to happen last year was that they would, you know, trail out a bunch of celebrities with all of this fanfare and somehow was going to capture the imaginations of young people. And I kept saying, people who care about who Beyonce is voting for don't vote. They came to see Beyonce. They didn't come because she's talking about an election, right? But when you have those one-to-one conversations and you talk to young people about the importance of their vote and they are excited about a candidate and, more importantly, that candidate's platform, you have a motivated voter who is going to go out. The Mamdani campaign saw more young voters between the ages of 18 and 24 than ever before. Very, very, very impressive. And I just want to see this momentum and this type of energy sweep the nation. And I want to see progressives in every state at every level of government duplicate this playbook because it works. Mm.
Well, if you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts on Zohran Mamdani rocking the political establishment in last week's New York City's mayoral primary? He won by a 12-point margin. Howard writes in, "Wonderful show. This is the future we need." What are your thoughts about this victory, about what this means for the future of the Democratic Party? Which way are they going to go? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. India Walton is a senior advisor for the New York Working Families Party, a senior strategic organizer with Roots Action, and a union nurse in Buffalo, New York. In 2021, India Walton also shocked the Democratic Party machine by winning Buffalo's mayoral primary as a Democratic socialist. Byron Brown, the man she beat, a four-term incumbent, teamed up with the party establishment and Republican donors to win in the November election. Hannah Rindle is director of candidate services for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. They work to build progressive power at all levels of government. Grace Mauser is co-chair of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. They have over 9,500 members. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss the abortion landscape 3 years after Supreme Court conservatives overturned Roe. 41 states now have abortion bans in effect. That is tomorrow. If you are in the Bay Area, I hope you can join us for another caregiving event. On Wednesday, July 9th, we'll be doing a live Your Call at San Francisco's main public library. A number of really incredible caregiving organizations will be there at 5 to talk about the services they provide. And then we'll go live at 6 o'clock. California State Assemblymember Matt Haney will be on the panel. That's Wednesday, July 9th, 5 p.m., a special Your Call live show at San Francisco's main public library to continue our discussion about the caregiving crisis in this country. Today, we are talking about last week's victory in New York. Zohran Mamdani, a 33-year-old Democratic Socialist and New York State Assemblymember in Queens, rocked the establishment by winning the mayoral primary by a 12-point margin. He ran on a campaign to freeze the rent and provide free buses and free childcare. He also wants to tax corporations on the 1%. His main message is that working class New Yorkers should afford to live in the city. If you followed this race, what are your thoughts about Mamdani's victory? And then what are your thoughts about the bigger question, what this means for the future of progressive politics and the Democratic Party? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall at kalw.org. India Walton is a longtime organizer. She won Buffalo's mayoral primary in 2021 as a Democratic Socialist, but Byron Brown, the man she met, teamed up with the Democratic Party establishment and Republican donors to win in November. Hannah Riddle is Director of Candidate Services for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Grace Mauser is co-chair of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. Grace, I heard you and a number of other members of DSA a couple nights ago talk about the organizing game you all put together. And you spent some time talking about what you all have learned over the past decade. You've had some victories. You've also had losses. So can you talk about what it really takes to run a field operation, again, in a state like New York City, where Andrew Cuomo had a massive PAC behind him, spending almost $31 million. What have you all learned over the years about what really works?
An important part of any DSA campaign, and I think any left campaign that is trying to face an incredible amount of organized and moneyed opposition, is being able to scale your operation. For DSA and for many aligned campaigns, this means empowering volunteers to take on more responsibility if they have the interest and the time and are willing to do so. In many traditional campaigns, some of which I've worked on or tried to volunteer on, it's very closed off. You can be a volunteer and you can knock on doors, maybe you can make phone calls, but there's no pathway for a smart, engaged, and willing volunteer to step up into more responsibility. This, I think, feels safer to a lot of traditional political operatives because they want to control the campaign very tightly, but it really limits your ability to scale. Zohran had over 50,000 people sign up to volunteer for his campaign. We had, especially by the end of the campaign, several dozen canvassing events every single week, probably over 100 some weeks. There is no way for you to be able to hire enough staff for them to directly manage those canvassing events or phone banks. So you have to be able to train and trust volunteers to become canvassing leads, become phone bank leads, and also open up even higher level strategic and logistical decision making to volunteers who show interest and ability in doing that. And that will let you scale far beyond your number of staff. And I really think that's why Zoran inspired so many people with his messaging. But the reason we were able to take that inspiration and scale it up into tangible on the ground work is because of the ethos of the campaign that believes that people who are interested, who have the time, are capable of doing this type of work and not gatekeep the skills or the information in a way that the traditional political class may want to do.
And what about just good old-fashioned campaigning? Because in this City piece about Zoran Mamdani winning a wave of Asian votes, he gained in heavily Chinese communities. He gained in what's called Little Bangladesh. He dominated South Asian enclaves in Queens. It's just really interesting just to look at a number of first-time voters. He won 52% of the first place primary votes in areas where more than half of the population is Asian. Again, heavily working class areas. The New York Times has a piece called Mamdani Triumphed Without a Majority of Black Voters. Where does that leave them? Black city leaders are worried their influence is waning at a moment when the rising costs that Mamdani put at the center of his campaign are pushing Black New Yorkers out of the city. So can you explain for us what's going on here, winning over so many South Asians and winning over a lot of working class voters that voted for Trump, but he did not win a majority of Black voters? Can you tell us how you see what's going on here, Grace, and what does that mean?
I can certainly begin to do some analysis, although a lot of it is still being done. But in terms of South Asian voters, when Zoran began this campaign, he had a thesis that Muslim voters in particular are an untapped voter base in New York City, and that they would be excited by and activated by the first major Muslim candidate running for mayor. And we're now in line to have our first Muslim mayor. But he didn't rely on identity alone. Of course, they had a very active outreach program that was working with existing organizations. You quoted Jagpreet Singh earlier. He works with an organization called DRUM, which stands for Desi's Rising Up and Moving. That is a very organized group that is working to align and activate Southeast Asian people across the city to come into their own demands and make those demands happen. In other working class neighborhoods, I think some of what you played earlier about Zoran talking about why people voted for Trump really pulled them back to vote for Zoran. This affordability message, this focus on the material needs of working class New Yorkers, I think spoke to many neighborhoods and many people who heard Trump hitting on some of the same things, have since seen that Trump is in fact more interested in illegally arresting and detaining their neighbors, and are now looking back to the Democratic side of the ticket to see if there's anything there for them to grab onto. And Zoran very much has offered something for them to grab onto.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say on the Black vote, Zoran has made really significant gains in that vote and outright won young Black voters. And that's an important step to make in building towards the general election. And this voter bloc generally is in many ways organized, but in some ways not, and has a strong tie to the political democratic establishment that in many ways is warranted, but in some ways is out of step with what would actually make New York more affordable for many of these voters. But I would also love to hear India's thoughts on this. Buffalo is a majority Black city, and so she has a lot of experience working with this block of voters.
And India, before you comment, I just wanted to mention, when you scroll down this long New York Times piece about this, they report that some on the Cuomo team believe that in the end, Mamdani may have actually topped Cuomo among younger Black voters. So you always have to dig a little bit more. But, you know, the headline, you know, is clickbait. But what are your thoughts about what we're learning right now about who voted for Mamdani and who did not and why?
Yeah, I think that... Well, Buffalo's not majority Black. Geez, how I wish, you know, that were true. But, you know, I think that a part of what it is that in the first time in American history, we see that this generation is far more progressive than our parents. And also, like, people are just tending to become more progressive as they get older rather than the reverse. But the thing about it, and I've been thinking a lot about this, right, is like how we get to sort of the Black triple prime Block club leader church goers, and they tend to trend a little bit more conservative. But I think that when we keep the issues focused on bread and butter, on affordability, on the price of groceries, right, when we have a platform that's based around an economic agenda and not sort of these other socially liberal constructs that I think a lot of older Black voters are afraid of, then I think that we'll see them come along. And I mean, if anybody saw Zohran at the House of Justice in Harlem with Al Sharpton, I mean, he knows how to capture the hearts of the electorate, no matter whom he's speaking to. And I think that, you know, his quotes about socialism from MLK and like a lot of things that he says and just his posture and the warmth that you feel when he's in a room is going to take him very far in winning that Black vote.
We're getting a few emails from listeners about how the Democratic Party machine is going to respond or how they're already responding. But what's going to come in the months to come? It's going to be a pretty ugly campaign. As someone sent a link to this article about Kristen Gillibrand apologizing to Zohran Mamdani over jihad claim. I'll just read this piece. The New York Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand has apologized to Zohran Mamdani for comments she made claiming that Mamdani had made references to global jihad. Gillibrand apologized for mischaracterizing his record and for her tone on the call, according to a readout of a phone call between Gillibrand and Mamdani that was obtained by Politico. You know, I really wanted to focus this show on the issues and what this means about for organizing, because you can spend a whole hour on these other things, India. But I just wonder, what are your thoughts? Because this is going to become, I mean, many parts of it are already ugly. The Islamophobia that we're hearing, the horrific messages from, you know, hard right Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene. What are your thoughts about how the campaign should respond to this? And what do you expect in the coming months, given that you've been through this?
Yeah, I think that Kirsten Gillibrand is a great example of how these statements are concerning organizing, because she needs to be primaried. She needs to be primaried, and she also needs to apologize publicly in the same way that she was so strong in her beliefs while she was speaking publicly. She needs to have that same energy when it comes to apologizing to Zohran. What she said was wildly ill-informed and inappropriate for anyone, let alone a sitting senator. So we can expect it, you know, to get just as ugly and as nasty. But I think that, like I said before, I would like for surrogates, for people like myself who have any bit of political influence, to speak on behalf of Zohran and defend him and allow him to be able to maintain his focus on the issues, because that is what is on the ballot, not his religion, not the utensils he uses to eat, and not phrases and words that he himself has never uttered.
And again, the challenge, Grace, is to keep things focused on the issues, which many in the media tend not to do. So what are your thoughts about how you're all going to deal with the ugliness that is expected in the months to come?
It's going to be a challenge for sure. There will be many people who cynically use the very real problem of anti-Semitism to unfairly attack a major Muslim political figure. They will do this in ways that are both overtly and covertly Islamophobic. And I think making people aware of that and not doing some inoculation work is important. And also, to India's point, staying relentlessly on message is very important, and pointing to things that Zohran concretely has committed to doing. So for example, when I'm asked about anti-Semitism, I point to the fact that Zohran is very committed to more than quadrupling the budget for the New York City office that investigates and fights hate crimes. And that's really important. He takes the safety of all New Yorkers extremely seriously and has also created a coalition that reflects an extremely broad spectrum of faiths across the city, of income ranges, of races. And all of that input is reflected not only in his communications and how he organizes, but also his platform.
And it was very interesting to see Brad Lander, who also ran for New York, who is Jewish. He campaigned with Mamdani. And because it's ranked choice voting, Lander said, you know, vote for me and vote for Mamdani. They were together on a number of occasions, including the Colbert Show, when they were asked about anti-Semitism. And so that was really interesting to see that, Grace, just to see Brad Lander and Zohran Mamdani cross-endorsing each other and talking about these issues. And in some cases, it's the first question that Mamdani is asked in interviews.
Yes, and I think that's a great example of some of the more covert Islamophobia that I was referencing earlier. Despite all evidence to the contrary, evidence about him wanting to increase hate crime prevention, having many, many Jewish leaders, both in his staff and as part of his coalition, cross-endorsing and working very publicly with Brad Lander, who, you know, proudly and publicly discusses his Jewish identity frequently. The first question many people are eager to ask him is basically, are you anti-Semitic? This, to me, is a very clear example of Islamophobia, and people who disagree with Zohran's ideas or are scared of the platform, are scared of the working class power he represents, hiding instead behind Islamophobic questions and comments.
And Eileen wanted us to mention what Trump said about Mamdani. For those who haven't heard, I'm reading from a New York Times piece yesterday. Trump floated an outlandish claim that Zohran Mamdani was an illegal immigrant and threatened to arrest him if he blocked immigration arrests in New York City. Mamdani has put out a statement about that. We've got a question from John saying, you've got to tax the wealthy to pay for free buses. And he says, just like in all human history, the rich get what they want. And when they do not pay taxes, they have huge armies of lawyers and accountants to avoid paying taxes. Who's going to pay for this? We're going to do a show about this, actually, in the coming weeks, John. So thank you for the question. We have someone who called in who couldn't stay on the line, who said the Staten Island Ferry is free. Why not the buses too? That's one of the arguments that Zohran Mamdani makes in a video. Your final thoughts, Hannah, about the future of this campaign? So it's July 2nd today. The mayoral race is in early November. It's going to get really ugly. What are your thoughts on what it will take to keep the campaign and the media really focused on the issues? You can debate the issues, but you know, these are such important topics to talk about because so many people are just having a hard time making ends meet in New York City, like so many parts of the country.
Absolutely. And to some of your previous points as well, it feels like we've seen more Democrats come out of the woodwork to critique and cut down Mamdani's campaign and his platform and issues than we've seen Democrats willing to fight against the Trump admin and congressional Republicans. And that old guard establishment of the Democratic Party did everything they could to defeat Mamdani, and they failed. And it seems like they're going to continue to do that work until November. And I think we've hit this a couple times throughout our conversation today, but what Zohran has as a candidate can't really forcibly be replicated. He's dynamic, he's authentic, he has substance that addresses young and working class voters. He has the style to communicate it effectively. He has the organizing program to get his message to all corners of the city and build this beautiful, wide coalition of voters. But what we should learn from this experience is that the old guard cannot continue to undermine and defeat young, popular, charismatic candidates just because they don't like those candidates for their populist, anti-corruption, anti-corporate, anti-war stances. They did this with Jessica Cisneros and Henry Cuellar. Mm-hmm. They did this with Jamal Bowman and George Latimer. They have tried to stop and successfully stopped AOC from earning a highly visible oversight position. Republicans cultivate and foster their charismatic stars, and Democrats in the old guard specifically tear theirs down from the inside, and that needs to stop if Democrats want to win again. And in terms of his platform and organizing, we should absolutely recognize that a platform that centers fighting for working class people, affordability, and not corporations or billionaires, that's the winning platform that needs to be replicated. And like you mentioned, affordability isn't a New York issue, isn't just a New York issue. People are struggling to pay for rising costs everywhere in every community. It's not a new problem, but it's an escalating problem. And the policy portfolio he built can be adapted and used across the country. Building affordability, taxing billionaires and corporations, that's universal. And we should also recognize that the amazing and insanely hard organizing and field work that India and Grace led on the ground, that's core to debunking the disinformation and de-escalating those negative attack ads that were bankrolled by the three times the spending limit in New York City. And his victory, the thing that we need to continue focusing on in media and in interviews over the next couple of months until November is that a new direction for the Democratic Party is possible. A future of dynamic candidates who appeal to young voters and working class voters with a platform that fights for people and not corporations, that is replicable.
Hannah Riddle, Grace Mauser, and India Walton, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. Your call.